Hi, this is Kate Magic and you're listening to the Raw Living Podcast. Raw Living is Europe's leading raw foods and superfood supplier, and I founded the company back in 2002. In this interview series, I'm talking to some of the people behind the brands that we offer on our shop to find out what exactly is the ethos behind the company. Not just the ingredients that they use and the processes that they use to create the end results, but I'm asking them other questions like, how do they show respect for the environment? How do they treat their workers and their relationship to the farmers who grow the crops? All the companies that we work with are putting huge amounts of dedication and commitment into creating products that are benefiting not just you, but also the whole ecosystem, the planet, the people. And with this series, I'm hoping to show insights into that. When you're shopping with these companies, you're really not just investing in your health, you're truly investing in a better world for us all. Today I'm speaking with Giles Henschel from Olives et al. About his incredible journey working with olives for 30 years now, bringing the best olives from around the world into the UK. Hi Giles, thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, thank you Kate, I've been really looking forward to this.
Well, you can tell us your story, but I think we discovered your olives, I want to say actually right at the beginning, about 20 years ago of our business.
Oh, crikey.
Yeah, I've eaten them not quite daily, but regularly ever since. And I really do believe that they're the best olives in the UK. And also I'd love to get into you how most olives are not raw and yours are unpasteurized.
Sure.
A lot of them are. But you've got a wonderful story. Do you want to tell us the story of how you started?
Yeah, okay. So I was in the army for 10 years during my 20s. And my wife, Annie, was a ballet dancer. And when she stopped dancing and I stopped being in the army, we decided to get married. But before we wanted to settle down and have a house and a car, family and all of those other things, we decided we wanted to go traveling for a year. So we sold everything we owned. We bought two motorbikes and we set off and we went down to Gibraltar and turned left. Mm. And we spent 12 months traveling right the way across the top of North Europe and then down through the Middle East, through Syria, Jordan, West Bank, Israel.
Wow.
And then down into Sinai. So we went down to, or through Jordan, all the way down into the Sinai Peninsula, right the way around there, over into Cairo, then all the way down to Sudan, back up and across the Western Desert, through to Libya. And that's where the trouble started, because we got arrested and kind of deported twice from Libya. They just wouldn't let us through. Yeah. So we ended up bumping our way back to the UK and arriving back here flat broke. This was 1993 now. So we left in 1992 and we arrived back in 1993. Flat broke, living in a bedsit in Southampton and thoroughly depressed. Mm-hmm. And we were both trying to start to other businesses. And we ended up sort of thinking, because we were so depressed, we'd treat ourselves by going into Southampton. We'd go and buy some nice wines, some nice bread and some nice olives. And we'd just put the tent up in the garden and pretend we were traveling again. So we went into town and we found the wine, found the bread, found the olives, came back, drank the wine, ate the bread and spat the olives out because they were revolting. Because we had used food as kind of a social lubricant everywhere we had gone on the trip. So every town, every village, every country, on a daily basis, you'd have an olive, breakfast, dinner, lunch, and tea whenever you were sort of eating anything. And we started to ask people, why does this olive taste like this? Why does this one taste like that? Why is this one green? Why is this one dark? When's that? And they said, are you genuinely interested? We said, well, yeah, we are. Because the more we discovered, the more we realized we didn't know and the more we wanted to discover. Mm-hmm. So we just fell in love with the food of the region. And it kind of became the sort of the whole essence we realized of the entire region that we're traveling through is this amazing fruit, this amazing tree with an amazing history and longevity. And so when we came back here, we realized that the olives that we were eating in the UK were kind of considered the raw ingredient. That's what the Mediterranean start with in order to make something that is really, truly, beautifully edible. Mm. And we had all these techniques and these recipes, and that's what we started to do.
Mm. So did you go back to contact suppliers?
Yeah, we did. And funny enough, our first two tins of olives that we bought, my parents at the time were living up near Oxford, and we'd ridden up there on our bikes, which we still have and still have to this day. And we'd gone to my parents' house, and there was one of those guys who was driving around in a van with short dated stock. You sort of say, "All right, missus, I've got this side of smoked salmon, but you better eat it today." And I said, "Have you got any olives?" He said, "Yeah, funny enough, I have. I've got a tin of green and I've got a tin of black." And we said, "Right, we'll have those." And we bought those two tins, and that's what we actually started to make our olives from, these two original tins. And when we turned them around, we found it was from a company called the Katsouris Brothers, who are up in London, and they were Cypriot importers. And we got in touch with them, and we would drive to London almost on a weekly basis to go and pick up the olives and go and see the Katsouris brothers and sit and drink coffee with them. And they're actually a company called Cypressa, who are a huge company now. But that's who we originally started buying. Now we actually buy directly from processors and producers and farmers in Greece, Spain, Sicily, Italy, all over.
And I understand you're about to embark on another road trip. Is that correct?
Well, yes, we are, because when we arrived back, we both love motorcycling, always have done. We're not bikers per se, but we just like traveling by motorcycle. We think it's a really good way of seeing a country and traveling quite slowly. And when we came back, these bikes had such an emotional attachment that we sort of said, "I'll tell you what, these will be the last things we ever sell before we go bankrupt. So we'll keep them." And here we are 30 years on, same two motorbikes. And we decided, because we've just had our 30th birthday, that we would go back out to the Mediterranean and this time go and see all of the farmers, growers, producers that we know and travel right the way around.
Amazing.
And then all of a sudden, during the course of the last year, climate change has really affected the olive harvest in a really, really critical way. And we decided that what we would do is actually go on this trip in order to go and research at first hand how climate change is affecting these various farmers, growers and producers that we know, and also lots of people who we don't. So we're traveling for 90 days, which is the limit that we can do because of Brexit. And we are traveling down through France, across Italy, down through Croatia, Albania, or Croatia, Montenegro, Albania, into Greece, and then across to Italy, Sicily, up Italy, round France, round Spain, up Portugal, across Spain, and then back. And we should be speaking to about 100 to 150 different people along the way.
Wow.
Asking them the same five questions, because we want to build a complete picture. No one's ever done this. No one. If you talk to a Spanish farmer, they will tell you about the situation in Spain, and they will blame everything on the Italians. If you talk to an Italian, they'll tell you that it's all the Greeks' fault. And if they talk to a Greek, it'll tell you it's the Italians' fault. But none of them have shared information with each other. So we're going to get all of these answers and then share it with everybody who we meet, as well as others, and on a wider platform as well, to really find out what's going on.
That would be so interesting.
Yes. I mean, the olive is, it is an amazing tree. We have about 11 million hectares across the world, and every hectare of olive tree removes 4.5 tons of carbon dioxide every year. That's 49.5 million tons of carbon dioxide being removed by the olive plantations. And the olive plantations actually represent the world's largest man-made forest, because every single one of those trees was planted by a human being at some point.
Wow.
The oldest tree we know was planted by the Minoans 3,200 years ago.
Wow.
And it's in Simonis in Crete. It is still harvested every year to this day and tended to by humans. So they really are an incredibly important plant for the planet.
Mm. And you mentioned production methods. So you import
we prefer not to say that we import, because import almost implies that we bring in a finished product that we simply put a label on and stick onto a shelf. We prefer to sort of say we buy all of our ingredients from all over the globe, and we buy our olives, and we buy our olives in Greece, we buy them in Spain, we buy them in sometimes in Turkey. Hitherto we used to buy some from Syria, we buy them in Sicily, and we bring them to England, we bring them to Dorset, and that's where we actually start. We start adding all of the value there. So we do all of the sorting, all of the grading, all of the marinating. We don't use any heat treatments. We don't use any pasteurization, no sterilizing. So everything is completely 100% raw, which for us is the way in which the Mediterraneans have always done it in their own homes. But there are large industrial factories and processes, as that there are with all sorts of things. So there are many different ways and many different methods of preparing olives for the table. But a lot of those are really quite industrial, and you end up with an olive that is very, very far removed from a naturally ripened, fully fermented, completely raw olive that has been allowed to mature over time and then been desalinated and then marinated in a range of herbs and spices to all sorts of different recipes from right the way around the Mediterranean.
So why are all supermarket olives pasteurized? Is it just laziness?
It's what they're used to. It's what they know. It's that they have these things called micro action groups, and they don't realize the fact is that I think that we've had olives that we know about for at least the last 6,000 years. I mean, amazingly, recently somebody has discovered some olive fossilized remains in South Africa dating back about 90,000 years.
90,
which nobody had any idea that actually existed, because all of the major texts were all sort of saying 6,000 years. Anyhow, for the vast majority of the last 6,000 years, we haven't had pasteurization and sterilization. They only came in about 150 years ago. We didn't have proper refrigeration. The Mediterraneans knew perfectly well how to process these things ambiently. So we just use the wisdom of the ancients, I suppose, is the best way of explaining it. We haven't invented anything. We just do what people do in their own homes and what they've done for generations. And we use similar recipes and similar techniques. And if you understand the toxicology and the microbiology of what you're working with, you don't need to pasteurize. You don't need to sterilize.
Right.
And you retain so much more nutrition and nutrients and benefits and the all of the great things that make olives healthy are retained.
And flavor.
Well, labor and energy
flavor.
And you cost. Flavor. Sorry, did you say flavor or labor?
Yeah, you retain all the flavor.
Yes, you do. But you do retain all the flavor, but also you get more flavor.
Yeah.
I mean, if you ever see those boot black olives, the ones that are pitted, and they're normally sold either in a jar or in a tin can.
Yeah.
Those are actually green olives that have been artificially oxidized and then treated with ferrous gluconate and caustic soda in order to turn them black.
Wow.
They've then been sterilized at around about, 130 degrees centigrade for about 20 minutes in order to kill them stone cold dead. And then we take them out of that and we cut them into four, and we put a little piece at 12 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 6 o'clock, 9 o'clock on a pizza, put it into an oven at 450 degrees centigrade, take it out, and everybody takes the olive off and says, you know what, I really don't like olives. I'm not surprised. That's so far removed from a proper, real, I'm not going to say real olive, but from a properly prepared, fully marinated, mature olive.
Yeah, but also your recipes are so good. Is that a lot of trial and error, or do you just have an instinctive flair for?
The vast majority of our recipe, well, I suppose the five original recipes that we started with were all gifted to us by individuals.
Wow.
So my favourite olive is the Calamatra. It's the Moorish recipe with cumin, coriander and cardamom. Yeah. That was given to us by a guy called Abu Faisal in a little village called Maskana in Syria. And he was the Bedouin chief of the village, and he kind of kidnapped us and sort of said, you must stay with me. And we stayed with him for a couple of nights, and he gave us his recipe.
Amazing.
The classic olive, chili, garlic, black pepper. That actually was, we first discovered that in a town called Ragusa down in Sicily. And we were staying with a guy called Gaetano Amato in Monte Rosso, who gave us his recipe. So our classic recipe actually comes from a guy whose name literally translates to Tony Love, Gaetano Amato, which is lovely. And we're actually going back to Monte Rosso on the trip. Unfortunately, he's no longer alive, but his relatives are, and we're going to go and see them and say thank you. the Greek recipe, rosemary, garlic, sun-dried tomatoes, we picked up in a bar, found somewhere in the island of Evia. And the Verdi recipe that comes from Spain. And so all of these recipes were originally gifted to us by people, by individuals. Amazing. And then as we've gone on, we've discovered more recipes. We've traveled more widely. We've been down to Australia. We've been down to South Africa. We've been down to New Zealand to go and see how they do olives. So, yeah, we just learn all of the time.
One of my favorites is, I'm going to say this wrong, but Bella di Cerilogna.
The Bella di Cerignola, yes.
Cerignola. So why is that olive so special?
It's a Puglia. It's from Puglia, which is in the sort of the heel of Italy. And it is prized for its size. And I mean, you look like you, in your photographs, you look like you're probably around about 5'7", 5'8".
Yeah, a little bit less, yeah.
Okay. Well, if you hold out your thumb, the Bella di Cerignola is about the size of the top joint of your thumb.
Wow.
It's a really big, meaty, chunky. It's quite knobbly and gnarly, and it looks a little bit sort of like an ugly, bugly olive, but they taste divine, and they're really prized, and they're prized for their size. So the Bella di Cerignola, the Bella refers to the size. It's the big, beautiful Cerignola,
so is
which
there
is a lovely Italian olive.
Is there a limited amount of those every year?
Yes, every year there are always limits in terms of both size and variety. But I mean, as I was saying earlier, that with climate change, we haven't had a good harvest for over 4 years.
Wow.
In an average year, or in a good year, let's say a good year, because there's no such thing as average anymore. In a good year across the Mediterranean, it will produce around about 2.5, 2.5 million tons of oil, olive oil. Last year, we produced 600,000.
Wow.
But the kicker in all of this is that 2.5 million in a good year, we last had about 4 years ago. The year after that, we probably had about run about 1.7. The year after that, around about 800,000. Now it's 600,000.
Wow.
And generally, when they harvest, all of that goes into lovely big stainless steel tanks and is gradually used across the year. And when it comes time for the next harvest, there's nearly always at least a third of that amount left in tanks, which is known as the carryover.
Yeah.
So you have some that then gets bottled and put into tin cans and bottles and IB or big bulk containers, and that's then sold until the new harvest comes online. No carryover this year, no carryover last year.
Right.
So just having 600,000 tons is nowhere near as much as it sounds as a proportion of the 2.5 million.
Right.
We should be. That's the reason why olive oil has almost quadrupled in price.
And surely olive oil is the most popular oil in the world, is it?
Popular, or 70% of all of the world's fats, actually. I think I read recently 70% of all the world's fats is actually palm oil. I don't know what proportion.
People don't eat palm oil at home, like in terms of what people.
No, they don't. They don't. But olive oil is by far and away the healthiest oil. And I don't say that from a position of bias. Glasgow University did a study some years ago when they gave control groups butter, rapeseed oil, sunflower oil, olive oil, and extra virgin olive oil, and asked them to take 20 milligrams each day, just raw. And at the end of I think it was a 6 or 8 week period, they then tested them. They tested them at the start and then they tested them at the end for the markers for coronary heart disease. Butter had increased. Rapeseed oil had not moved. So irrespective of the rapeseed industry telling you that rapeseed oil is healthy, Glasgow University would tell you differently. It makes no difference to your heart at all, nor does sunflower oil. However, olive oil and extra virgin olive oil had both plummeted. In other words, it had really reduced the coronary heart risk markers. So it is incredibly good for you. So I would say it is probably one of the most popular oils in the world.
And tell us about your oil. Where are the olives from and where do you press it?
We press it in Extremadura, which is, if you imagine a picture of Spain and you can think of where Lisbon is and you just come directly into Spain from Lisbon, it's just close to the Portuguese, the Spanish-Portuguese border, Extremadura. It's a region that if you translated that into English, it means extremely hard. It's a very barren, rugged landscape. And years ago, I met an amazing guy called Fernando Sanchez Mejino y Arias, who has an estate down in Extremadura. And in our oil is it's a single estate. So that might sound strange, but most olive oil, most supermarket oil, and there's nothing wrong with this, most supermarket oil would be blended. So it'd be the output of many, many, many different farms across many different regions that is put together and then blended so that it will taste the same every single year. A single estate oil is affected by the climate and the all sorts and the ground, and every year it is ever so slightly different. So our oil comes from Extremadura, from one single estate, and it's a blend of three different varieties. Mandalina Cascareña, an Arbequina, and a Frantoia.
And can you explain to people why they should always look for superior category olive oil?
Yes. So this whole thing about virgin and extra virgin, a lot of people think that the virgin term is because it's the first time it's been squeezed, and it's nothing really to do with that. It's actually because the Greeks believed that the olive tree was so sacred, and this is back in the days of a philosopher called Solon, many thousands of years ago, and they believed that the olive tree was so sacred, so they passed a decree that said that only the pure and chaste could tend to the olive trees. Uh-huh. Hence, it was the virgin's olive trees, and the virgin's olives, and the virgin's olive oil. And that was what categorized it from. Was this looked after by the right people? Yes, it was. So it's virgin olive oil. And then nowadays we have categories. So the first time all oil is pressed, if it is completely absent of any defect and it tastes really good and it's everything else is all good, they will test it. And they'll test it for oleic acid. And if it is below 0.8% oleic acid, it is considered to be extra virgin olive oil. Right. And the definition of extra virgin olive oil is superior category of olive oil produced by mechanical means and not subject to heat treatment.
Right.
So it can't be, the whole of the supply chain of the olive, right the way through its production process, the temperature can never exceed 27 degrees.
Right.
So it is, and that is what they would say is cold pressed. Cold pressed doesn't really have very much meaning anymore.
Yeah.
That likewise, first cold pressed doesn't really have any meaning anymore. What we're looking for is the acidification level. And anything between 0.8 and 2% oleic acid is considered to be virgin olive oil. And anything over 2% is considered to be unfit for human consumption, goes off and is chemically refined, and then comes back onto the market as pure olive oil, or sometimes described as light olive oil.
Yeah.
Has absolutely no health benefits, all gone.
Right.
So stick to your extra virgin or your virgin. Sorry?
Make soap out of it, right? It makes good soap.
Yes, it does. I mean, the pomace, that's what they make from the pomace. So when you press the olive, you have three things that you get. You get the oil, you get a vegetable water, which is the sort of just the watery juice from the olive, and then you get what's known as the pomace, which is the pit and the flesh that is left after it's all been squished. That pomace is stored and collected and goes off to particular, very specific factories. The pomace factories that work year round, all day long, 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. And they take that pomace and they press it under extremely high pressures and heat, and they extract the very last vestiges of oil, which is known as pomace oil. Again, no health benefits and no flavor. And that oil is very often, that's the one that gets used for soap.
Right.
Very difficult to make soap from extra virgin olive oil because it's got more chains.
Ah, interesting. And let's talk about your deli range. We love your garlic, and your capers are the best I've ever had.
Ooh.
Cornichons.
Which capers? Which capers?
Capers. Is it capote?
The capote. Yeah. Have you tried the Lilliputs?
No.
Oh, the Lilliputs. The Lilliputs are they're really weeny. So the capers capotes, yeah, we buy all of these in Spain. That's where we actually source. So when people ask us, you know, what do you do? A quick sort of short and pithy, we create source and supply. So we create product, but we also source really good product.
Yeah.
So hence we source a great extra virgin olive oil. We can't press it in this country, but we source really great capers, really great anchovies, really great cornichons. And we'll be visiting them on the trip, going to go and see them. But the capers capote, you have sort of different grades of capers. You have nonpareil, which are about 7 to 9 millimeters in terms of size, and then you have the capotes, which are slightly larger, and the lilliputs, which is the smallest possible grade, which are much more delicate. So when you're going to put them onto, maybe you're going to make a caper butter to put over a nice dish of, or a nice fresh salad, you want them really quite small. And that's what a lilliput caper is perfect for.
Mm-hmm.
Caper capote, great for chopping up and adding a real depth of flavor into all sorts of things.
So why do you think yours are the best? It's the sourcing and it's what you do with them.
Yes, I tend to think that it's the way in which we source. We don't just buy the first one that we come across.
Right.
And I think the difference with us is if you talk to a Spaniard or to somebody in Spain, they will tell you all about Spanish olives. And they know Spanish olives, of course they do. They know a little bit maybe about Italian. If you talk to an Italian, they know Italian olives inside out. If you talk to a Greek, they know Greek olives inside out. If you talk to us, we've actually worked in Spain, in France, in Italy, Sicily, Tunisia, Libya, Algeria, Morocco, Peru, Brazil, Argentina, South Africa, New Zealand, Namibia. We know all of those places. We know their products, so we know where to source the best ingredients for the particular application that we're looking for.
Mm.
So it's not just here's a caper. No, we try and be as considered as we can. So I don't know whether you've ever had any of our nuts. We roast nuts, and we roast a variety of almond.
Uh-huh.
And the variety of almond that we've chosen is slightly ridged. There are other almonds, like a Marcona, for example, that are really nice and smooth. The reason why we use the one with the ridges on is because when we roast it and tumble it, it traps more flavor. It holds more flavor onto it. So all of the things that we do, we consider the right ingredient for the right purpose. Mm-hmm. And I think we're quite unusual in doing that.
Right.
And we like to keep our ingredients as authentic as possible. We like to keep our ingredient paragraphs as short as possible.
Mm.
If you think about a supermarket sandwich or a sandwich that you might buy when you're out and about somewhere, and you think about the ingredient paragraph that you read on that, it's immense.
Yeah.
Well, you go and have a look at one of our dressing recipes and you'll find 4 lines.
Right.
We use the minimum amount of ingredients. Nothing is over-engineered. We don't use artificial flavorings or additives or preservatives because we don't know how to, if we're honest. If you want to make a mustard and herb dressing, get some mustard, get some herbs, and make a dressing.
Amazing.
It's not putting artificial flavors and sodium benzoates or potassium this or just bisulfite or that. We just don't use them.
Yeah, amazing. Well, I'm sure we're all wishing you well on your journey. It's been so fascinating to talk to you. Are you going to be sharing your journey? Can people find it anywhere?
Yes, yeah, they can. You can go on to oliveszatel.co.uk. And if you just go and look at stories, you will find we will be putting regular updates on there. And if you follow us on Instagram, you'll see the odd video and the odd picture going up on there. And the same on Facebook too.
Amazing. Giles, thank you so much. We so appreciate your
thank you, Kate. It's been so lovely to talk to you. Thank you so much. It's been great.
Thank you for listening. You can check out the products we've been talking about by visiting Raw Living, rawliving.co.uk. And if you haven't got an account already, then do sign up. You get £5 off your first order. And also please do like, subscribe and share this podcast. It really does help.